using the heel stone, lining up these monuments. And here you get a nice impression of the mound, not so clear as the Aubrey Circle, which is close to the mound. The marker stones, you can see the two mounds that set two of them apart, these marker stones. Interestingly enough, you extend the line from this one to that one and keep it going through the Mediterranean, it'll hit the pyramid dead on the nose. This is a very nice picture. I wish I had an enlargement of that. Now, back off here. You can see the mound out here. For the marker stones, you see the mound, and you'll see little indications of the Aubrey holes for the Aubrey Circle. The Sarsen Circle with the stones cut in curves, a complete circle, as down here in the redesign, as originally completed. Now, portions of the Sarsen Circle broken down. The giant trilithons. Bluestone Circle, the horseshoe of the Bluestone Horseshoe. Only a few stones still standing. That's a nice picture, Peter. So use it as I call for a picture. Outside the arrangement of the bluestones and dwarfing them by their enormity stand the stones of the Trilithon Horseshoe. Take a picture of it. Now that's it. Where are you going? Now mummify yourself right there, Peter. Or better yet, metamorphosis yourself to stone. Stay on that figure. Trilithon. The word trilithon is unique to Stonehenge and was coined from the words tri, meaning three, and litho, meaning stone. They are freestanding units consisting of two uprights topped by a lintel. They are of sarsen, a kind of natural sandstone. The trilithons are the tallest stones in the monument, and the lone remaining stone of the great central trilithon towers above all. It weighs approximately 50 tons and is the largest prehistoric hand-worked monolith in Britain. Now, they didn't dig up those 50-ton stones right there in the plain. Where'd they get them? How'd they get them there? There are five trilithons. The uprights in each unit are so close together that it is not possible for a man to walk between them. They form a set of frames when coupled with the corresponding arches in the Sarsen Circle, through which specific locations on the distant horizon may be viewed. The lintels which topped the uprights were held in place by a mortise and tenon system. On top of each upright was tooled a knob or tenon which fitted securely into a corresponding hole or mortise on the underside of each lintel, thus holding them firmly in place. The tenon can easily be seen today on top of the one remaining stone of the great central trilithon which has lost its lintel. Both the bluestone and trilithon horseshoes open to the northeast in the direction of summer sunrise. Surrounding the trilithons is the bluestone circle. It is now composed of 20 stones which can be seen above the ground. The excavations of Colonel Hawley in 1924 revealed holes where other bluestones may once have stood in the circle. In 1954, the excavations of Professor Atkinson, Piggott, and Stone revealed three stone stumps on the line of the circle. It is uncertain how many stones were originally in this circle. Some have supposed there may be as many as 60. Immediately the outside of the bluestone circle is the Sarsen circle. The bluestone circle, right in here, smaller stones. Immediately outside is the Sarsen circle. The ones with the curved cut on them. It was originally composed of 30 uprights topped by 30 lintels. 16 of these stones stand today. These were of Sarsen limestone, from whence it derives its name. Each of the uprights is estimated to weigh about 30 tons and the lintels about 7 tons. The inner face of the uprights were dressed and polished. The mortise and tenon method was employed in placing the lintels, just as in the trilithons. However, the ends of the lintels were given tongue and groove fittings here. Here's a picture of the way the stones over here, Peter. Then you'll have to go back and unmetamorphose. See the tongue and groove type fitting in these great giant stones? Go back and metamorphose. Outside the Sarsen circle are the Y and Z holes. They're not visible today, having been filled in by natural processes. There are 29 Z holes, 30 Y holes. Now here is a reconstruction of all these units. The Z holes just outside the Sarsen circle. And the Y holes just outside the Z holes. And then we'll come to the Aubrey circle. Beyond the Y and Z holes lies the Aubrey circle, consisting of 56 holes, so named for their discoverer, John Aubrey, who found them in 1666 A.D. Excavation showed that they were steep-sided, flat-bottomed holes varying from 2.5 to nearly 6 feet in width and 2 to 4 feet in depth. Only 32 of these have been excavated and examined. These can be found today by concrete markers placed over them. Standing approximately on the line of the Aubrey circle are the four station stones. They formed a rectangular perpendicular to the summer sunrise. These were of the Sarsen variety. Only two of the station stones remain today, and one of these is in a prone position. Surrounding the Aubrey circle is a bank and ditch. This bank is thought to have been about 6 feet high and about 20 feet wide, forming an outer barrier or wall of the monument with a mean diameter of about 320 feet. This bank was composed of white chalk, which makes up most of the surface of the region around Stonehenge. It probably presented an impressive sight. It is supposed that this bank, as well as acting as a barrier for the enclosure, also served as a horizon for the viewing of the sun and moon through the stone archways. There was a 35-foot opening in the bank at the entrance facing the summer sunrise. Over here, Peter. And the heel stone is outside the embankment. Back to their metamorphosis position. One of the unique features of Stonehenge is that this bank is within the circle of the ditch which surrounds it. At all other circular megalithic sites in Britain, the bank is outside the ditch. The ditch outside the bank. To the northeast of the circle stands the Healstone. Not in that picture, but down here you'll see it in the reconstruction. Back to Metamorphosis. To the northeast of the circle stands the Healstone, a most impressive stone of the sarsen variety, showing no signs of tooling, but left completely in its natural state. This large undressed stone is leaning toward the circle at an angle of about 30 degrees from the perpendicular, giving the appearance of bowing toward the monument. Some say its appearance resembles that of the head of a fish. No one really knows how it acquired its name, but several suggestions have been offered. Since this stone provides the alignment of the summer solstice sunrise, it has long been called the sunstone. The Greek word for stone is helios. Thus, the name is thought to come from Helios stone. Others feel it comes from the Welsh word for sun, Hael. Regardless of the origin, it is definitely the sunstone, for it stands outside the entrance, marking the northernmost extreme of the summer sun at the solstice. Now, you that watch the sun in this northern hemisphere, come to me for a moment. Are they awake up there? Don't let the Tuesday night director ever direct on Friday night again. You who follow the sun in the northern hemisphere know that as summer arrives, the sun starts coming up in the east, but further toward the north. The summer solstice is that morning when the sun comes up at the northernmost part of its apparent journey and then starts reversing itself as it moves toward the low point of the horizon, coming up in the mid of winter at its furthest south position. Now, the Healstone enables the marking of that summer solstice sunrise. And that's why some have thought the name comes, as I've said, it satisfies me the most, from Helios, probably via the Welsh. Lying buried at the entrance between Aubrey Holes 56 and 1, as they are numbered, the Aubrey Holes, are numbered from 1 at this entrance all the way around. These Aubrey Holes, being given those numbers from the starting point of the opening, you begin to sight them in. Lying between, buried at the entrance between Aubrey Holes 56 and 1 is the so-called Slaughterstone. There's no evidence to justify the name. It is thought to have been an upright pillar, but was purposely buried, probably because it obstructed the view of the Healstone. No one really knows why it was buried. Some have supposed that this stone, along with the companion stone topped by a lintel, formed an arch at the entrance to the monument. But the top of this stone has no tenon, therefore it apparently never held a lintel. If there was a companion stone, it has never been found. However, there is evidence that a large stone once stood in the necessary spot, which is why this replica has the two stones standing here. Now, all I really want you to get as a Gestalt at this point is that this is carefully laid out. You got that?
Yes, sir.
And that you can find the center point of the circle where the altar stone is. And that from that center point of the circle, you can line up through the sunstone the summer solstice. With that in mind, I want to review again the relationship with the Great Pyramid in a series of diagrams, which makes it easy because I don't have to talk that much. Just show you pictures. With the familiarity you now have with Stonehenge, this is a little easier to illustrate. Here's your Aubrey Circle from the pictures we have just shown you. Just outside the Aubrey Circle is the chalk mound encircling with the opening about here and the ditch outside. Exactly at the summer solstice, with the horseshoe of the five trilithons, the Sarsen circle here, which is the large curved tongue and groove encircling stones of Sarsen limestone, the large trilithons forming a horseshoe looking out that direction through the opening. Not shown here would be the bluestone horseshoe, alder stone in the middle. In the middle of the circle, siding through the opening, the summer solstice can be marked through the heel stone. At that exact time of the year, true north forms an angle that is the exact angle of the pyramid, 51 degrees plus, which said angle is the so-called pi angle, because a pyramid at that angle and only at that angle, as I showed you last night, enables a four-sided pyramid constructed at this angle to have the exact ratio of relationship between its height to the perimeter around its four sides that the radius of a circle has to its circumference, which is why they call it the pi angle. A triangle, a pyramid, four-sided, at this angle is a triangular replica of a circle. Thus, a pyramid at this angle sitting on the globe is a half replica in pyramid form of the globe itself, enabling the projection of dimensions translatable into the dimensions of a circle, because the height of the pyramid has the same relationship to the perimeter of the four-sided pyramid that the radius of a circle has to its circumference. Now, I said last night, isn't it interesting that this circular monument on the plain of Salisbury is designed in all of its construction to keynote mark the summer solstice, which, as designed at this place, project a line to true north, forms an angle which is the pi angle, which is the angle of the pyramid of Giza, which is the angle of the pyramid, which is the pi angle. And thus, the most important timing marker of this monument on the Salisbury Plain immediately strikes a relationship to the Great Pyramid of Egypt and the line drawn through the summer solstice and true north. In addition, you now are familiar with these station stones marked with their mark, two of which still stand. These form a perpendicular rectangle, perpendicular to this summer solstice, which is the keynote marker, as there is a benchmark in the pyramid. And if you draw a line, I've said many times, between station stone 93 and 91, from northwest through the southeast marker stone, and keep it going very straight through the Mediterranean, it will hit the pyramid. So you did this last night, so I'm bored. Here's another drawing with just the Sarsen circle projecting true north at the summer solstice, 51 degrees, 51 minutes, the angle of the pyramid. If you lay it out to scale with a cross section of the pyramid laid on the ground according to scale, Sarsen circle, Aubrey circle, pyramid to scale, cross section laid out, put the galleries and the passageways in according to scale, with the well shaft, the first ascending passage, and pinpointing the date 33 AD where the Grand Gallery opens up, project a horizontal line. It will hit the circle perimeter of the Aubrey circle at the exact same point that a perpendicular line to the angle of the pyramid hits it. Want me to continue?
Yes, sir.
Now, the thesis of this book, to you who just joined us, reading from Stonehenge, A Closer Look by Bonnie Gaunt, is that the circle of Stonehenge represents a 7,000-year chronometer, which can be broken down, 360 degrees of the circle being 7,000 years, then 1 degree is 19.444444 years, and so on down to smaller units, factoring out to 1 year equaling 0.0514285 degrees on a circle. Very simple formula, if true. Taking the circle at 360 degrees, one degree representing a certain amount of time, if 360 degrees represents 7,000 years, which is her assumption, you come up with some interesting dates on this circle that coordinate with the pyramid. Would you like me to continue? Because they hit dead on 33 AD in the pyramid. It's dead on 33 AD on the Aubrey Circle, Stonehenge. And, oh, you don't want me to go.